Taipei got shortlisted last time as well, San Diego and Auckland, so they might actually just cinch the win, but we will see.
Will they keep dodgeball from the last round?
This is true. Yeah. If the gay games come to Canada, will we go?
If it's local, and actually if they introduce roller derby.
Edmonton and Vancouver.
Oh, so, fair enough. It's like... Well, then I don't know. Possibly not, but I really hope... Actually... Jokes about Crokinole aside, roller derbies are definitely a thing that are huge in Canada, and I would love to see an international level game of sturdy lesbians on roller skates knocking each other over. Not only that, but it is sort of the... Roller derby is to sports what pro wrestling is to combat sports. So when you're watching a roller derby, really you're there for the nacho and beers, and the fun roller derby is just something to cheer at.
Exactly.
I would love to go to an Olympic level roller derby.
We should go to some roller derby.
We should
games.
Go to a roller derby.
Exactly. Just as spectators.
Yes.
It's a great spectator sport.
Yes.
Just angry lesbians on rollerblades. What more do you need?
With thick thighs who are impossible to knock over.
Exactly. Yeah. Like tanks. Motorized tanks.
Yes.
They are the... I'm going to stop there.
And they would be flattered. This is not insulting.
No.
They're like, that's why we're here.
They're like, yes.
Yes.
All right. I want to move on to Barry Manilow and Bette Midler.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Now, in a recent news interview that Barry Manilow did with the Hollywood Reporter, mm-hmm. I think the print edition that's out now, spoke a lot about, obviously, his life and so on, but talked about how in 1971 he was hired by Bette Midler, mm-hmm. the incredible Bette Midler, mm-hmm. To be the musical director for her stage show at the Continental Baths.
Mm-hmm.
Now... How do we break down this piece of queer history?
Uh-huh.
So for a very long time, homosexuality was illegal in many places, including North America.
Uh-huh.
And gay men and men that have sex with men didn't have that many locations to be able to gather.
Uh-huh.
And bathhouses tended to fill that space.
Yes.
They served as a location where there could be cruising. Mm-hmm. Many of them were outfitted for the purpose of what comes after cruising.
A lot of it comes from the fact that bathhouses, spas, and other sort of like like spa type places were one of the few places where it was legal to have sex-based segregation. So you could have like a men's bathhouse and a woman's bathhouse. Mm-hmm. So if you had a men's-only bathhouse, then you could do a lot of more men's-only things without the public in general noticing. If a straight man went in there, they'd be like, whoa, I'm in the wrong place, and they may leave. And because it's not an integrated setting, you're not likely to get children and underage people coming
Absolutely not. So you can actually do a lot more.
And having a bit more of a diverse environment, so you have... You know, your quote-unquote spa in the back. You have some quote-unquote rooms to let upstairs in case you have a little nap.
Just be abundantly clear. This is not Nordic sauna. This is not, you know, Japanese saunas. It is...
They have the facilities in case they get inspected, but nobody... Well, I mean, I don't know. It depends on what era of history you're looking at, how used they were.
But Western bathhouses are... You know, a breed of their own. Normal.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. But some of them also had a bar, a small restaurant, a stage where they would have live performers. They were pretty elaborate places. And New York and San Francisco are the more famous ones.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, they were kind of sprinkled out across the continent.
Pretty much every major city has had bathhouses.
Yes.
And many of the major cities continue to have bathhouses.
Yes.
So I believe Vancouver, Toronto, Montreal all mm-hmm. have bathhouses mm-hmm. in operation. I don't recall if Ottawa still has one.
I don't know. I know that
they had one for a little while.
I know Ottawa has 3 heterosexual sex clubs.
But maybe not a bathhouse.
Yeah. Not a gay one, yeah. And it's interesting, if you're talking about the stage part, Bette Midler got her start working in bathhouses, mm-hmm. as did Tori Amos. And there's a few other people, but I can't quite remember who did get started. Usually it's just because it's cheaper. to get like single performers in. One person and a piano, one person and a guitar. So, you know, if you're an acoustic performer who sits there and you duct tape a tambourine onto your right foot and then you tap your foot while you play the guitar, that's the kind of person who would typically end up playing in a bathhouse.
So Bette Midler and Barry Manilow were talking, or Barry Manilow was talking about this and kind of the cultural moment that happened. I think Elton John has performed in the bathhouse.
Probably.
Yeah. You know, but what I wanted to talk about, obviously this is an interesting history lesson, 1970s Barry Manilow, Bette Midler, performing in a space where there are men wearing just a towel.
Mm-hmm.
There are men who were not wearing a towel.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that was the space that you were in. And I think that queer culture now is missing that. That's where I kind of want to circle around on this story. Where is the bathhouse entertainment of 2024? And what I mean by that is a space that is, you know, relaxing, low-key, very, very queer-coded.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? You're not going to have an accidental audience in a bathhouse. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, folks will discover very quickly what the, you know, thing is. It's a third space. It's a space to gather. I don't know if we necessarily have that. You know, we have bars and clubs and so on. And
well, so the bathhouse scene kind of got kicked in the ribs by the AIDS epidemic.
Yes.
Not only because people were afraid to go anymore, but also a huge portion of their audience
literally died off. Yeah, exactly.
And bars in general, like a lot of the third spaces in Canada, are already struggling. So, and it's not just gay bars, not just clubs, but also bowling alleys and billiard halls are struggling on account of the COVID lockdowns. Some of them have not properly bounced back. Some of them are still struggling. And it really does seem to be these two things in combination. I'm not going to say third spaces have disappeared. Also, a lot of people are just staying home.
Yeah,
you know, why would they go to a bathhouse when they can download a mediocre app and see the same 20 people again and again instead of going out and meeting somebody in person and interacting with somebody as a human being and not as a product on a thing that's laid out exactly like a shopping website? I mean, this is old man Sebastian here, obviously. There is this sort of a need. I think until we re-embrace being there in person, I don't think this kind of thing is going to happen.
I think, just to expand on why I think there should be more Barry Manilows in a bathhouse, and that is because there is something about a minority space when they are in the majority. So think of, you know, a club which is predominantly women with one particular shared experience.
Mm-hmm.
Or a space that's dominated by gay men. Mm-hmm. Or a space dominated by lesbian rollerbladers. You know, it changes the dynamic of what happens in that space. The kind of conversations that you can have.
I mean, you don't even have to go that far. You could just talk about, like, a mosque or a synagogue.
Exactly, yeah. Congregation of people who are very similar.
Yeah.
And I think that queer culture is, and always has been, quite avant-garde, quite pushing the boundaries, quite, you know, a lot, we think about fashion and design, so many gay influences, you know, in those areas.
Mm-hmm.
And I hate to say, but I think bathhouses played a role in carving out a space where experimentation can make split, you know, can happen, a space where Tori Amos can play and Barry Manilow can sing without necessarily feeling too judged.
I mean, probably the weirdest man of the 1980s, like the guy who helped create the weird 80s. So Klaus Nomi.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
A guy so weird that David Bowie said he was jealous of how weird Klaus Nomi was. Like, that gives you an impression. He said he got a lot of his inspiration by talking to people in bathhouses.
Yeah.
He was also the first celebrity to die of HIV, unfortunately.
Mm.
So, I mean, you're looking at a double-edged blade there. So, I mean, really, safe sex, safer sex, better healthcare. I mean, that can definitely get into that. Also, I mean, there's a lot of talk about desexualizing a lot of these spaces. So, like you were saying, you know, a lot of people in the Front Runners, that's the name of the running group in
Ottawa. Oh, the Front Runners. Yeah.
If you're joining the Front Runners or the Rideau Speedos or the Ottawa Wolves or even just some online, I don't know, gay Minecraft server.
Yeah, backgammon or something.
You're there for the hobby. You're not there for the sex. And I've heard a lot of people saying, like, they don't mind the fact that a lot of people are there to meet a future partner.
Mm-hmm.
Or they're open-minded to meeting a future partner. Yeah. But they're not just there to run through the audience like, I don't know, like tissue Pokemon. Papers. Yeah. They're not trying to collect
everyone. Yeah,
exactly. So
I have the full team. Yay!
There is this sort of like, there has been a shift where people want something a little bit more profound and connecting. And they're not just there to run through people.
So maybe bathhouses is a step too far.
Well, you know, take the model, take what works for it, drop the rest, just like most of history. You know, mm-hmm. the carriage, the horse, we don't need the horse anymore, but let's look at that carriage and see if we can stick a motor in it. You know, mm-hmm. like you can extract the good from the out of date, let's mm-hmm. say. I don't want to necessarily say bad because I wasn't alive in the 60s and 70s, so I don't know how it worked quite particularly, but, you know, there was something that worked for them at that time. Let's take what would work for us and take that as a model. That's what I would say.
It was an underground, distinctly gay space.
Right.
And I think it'd be cool to have some more of those. Towels or no towels shall remain to be seen. But we're going to be jumping now to Boys Want to Be Her by Peaches.
Mm-hmm.
And we shall be back just after.
So do you.
Welcome back to Can Queer, home of Canada's queer media. My name is Luke Smith.
And I'm Sebastian.
And that was Boys Wanna Be Her by Peaches. And
I love Peaches, but she has maybe six songs that are radio friendly.
If six is optimistic.
She was actually talking about people being jealous of somebody else. A good friend of David Bowie. David Bowie's jealous of Klaus Nomi for how weird he was. And Iggy Pop was jealous of Peaches for how hard she was. And they worked together as well. So, yeah. They had a weird relationship. But, yeah.
So, there is an article in Sex Roles, the Journal of Research.
Okay.
And it is on gender, masculinity, and the perceptions of vegetarians and vegans.
Oh.
Now, I don't know what you think the perception might be, but essentially eating meat has been associated with masculinity, healthier, smaller meals has been seen being perceived as feminine, and yeah, it could potentially not be in our best interest.
It is so weird, but there is a weird gender coding when it comes to food that I've tried to talk to people about, and some of them are just like, no, that's stupid, you're stupid. And it's not as strong, but it is definitely out there. And I think one of the more interesting things out there, are you familiar with Pocky?
Like the stick thing.
Chocolate on a biscuit. Yeah. You're familiar with men's Pocky?
What's men's Pocky?
So, okay. I only know this because I lived in Japan and I learned this the hard way. In Japanese culture, things that are sweet and soft are considered feminine.
Okay.
And so men don't eat chocolate because it's sweet and soft. So, if you have bitter, non-milk chocolate, it's not just dark chocolate, but like nothing in there whatsoever to give it a creamy texture. So, dark chocolate dipped in raw cocoa so that it's extra bitter. That's considered manly chocolate. So they have men's Pocky so that men can also enjoy Pocky without looking effeminate by eating like the pink one that's dipped in sprinkles. And we also have this when it comes to alcoholic beverages in North America. So wine spritzers are coded as feminine for some reason. Whiskey is coded as masculine for some reason. Gin is kind of neutral. If you go to a bar and you look at who orders gin, it's almost 50-50.
Yeah.
If you're looking at beer, beer can be coded as masculine, but there are a lot of women who drink beer as well. Usually light beers. And this is the stereotype. It's not actually anything to do with anything real. There's also a thing where red meat is considered masculine, and then like fish is considered feminine, which is kind of interesting because it's backwards, because men need more zinc and copper in their diet and they should be eating more seafood, and women need more iron in their diet and they should be eating red meat. The whole thing is backwards. Actually, also, if men eat too much red meat, you can get heavy metal poisoning from the iron if you eat red meat twice a day every day.
My neighbor does that.
It can add up and not to be crass about it, but if you don't bleed every so often, like you can't get rid of the iron quickly enough.
This is true.
There is this weird coding that we do with food that it's not strong. Like you're not going to look at a man who eats fish and be like, oh, I bet he's lighting the loafers. Like it's more complicated than that. Well, but there is a weird thing that we do with food that it is gendered.
This was
across cultures as well. It's not just North America.
This wasn't a huge survey. It was about 1,000 Polish people representative of Poland.
Okay.
And about 36 qualitative participants in a follow-up survey. But one of the things that I thought was interesting was that if a woman goes into a new relationship and the man has a dietary restriction, vegetarian, for example, less of an issue than if a man enters a new relationship and the woman is vegetarian. Like, men take more umbrage with other people's dietary choices than women do.
I have noticed
like that perception of the masculinity of the meal. Now, me and Jake watched a couple of food documentaries recently, my partner Jake, and I have genuinely been thinking, like, wow, I need to bring in more meals. Even if right now I think we're at one or two a week where there isn't a meat product in it, and just sort of like scaling down, you know, that's the plan.
Mm-hmm.
But it's interesting that even me and Jake, we're quite you know, quote unquote woke and, and progressive, and we're a gay couple, but still the idea of a meal without some red meat taking up 2/3 of the plate is a barrier that needs to be crossed. Like, is a meal, like Jake said to me, and I'm going to get this on the t-shirt.
I've seen him get furious before. He's like, what is wrong with your plate? Because I've been in restaurants with him, and there was a broccoli on it. And he was just like, what?
What are you doing with that broccoli? But he said to me once that soup is water with debris. And I'm like, he's not wrong. It is water with debris. But soup, unless it's got a meat that comes with it, it's not a whole meal. Like, it's bizarre. It really is. He's not
had a proper good French tomato soup.
He hasn't had a good soup. That's what I think it is.
But you make your Welsh potato leek soup, and it's good.
True. There's your bacon in it.
Oh. Yeah, you can make it without the bacon, and it's still good.
This is true.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, the idea is being a vegetarian or a vegan being perceived as effeminate. I don't think that we're going to deal with our high rates of obesity as a nation, our high rates of cholesterol, our what have you, unless we can start really breaking down our diet.
It is so weird. I mean, on the other hand, you know that gladiators, like I'm a middle-aged man talking about Rome.
Talking about the Roman Empire.
Give me a moment.
It took us this long to get to the Roman Empire. Yes.
Gladiators, many of them deliberately packed on body weight because if you got cut or stabbed, the body fat was actually a barrier between the knife and your organs. So a lot of them would deliberately put on weight, and they would actually do that through a vegetarian diet. So because it's less filling, so you can eat more, so you're packing on more calories without being as full as quickly. So a lot of them would eat a lot of beans and bread. So it is actually possible. The diet thing, it's a little bit more complicated than that. And there is that weird thing about... I wouldn't say necessarily that... I think most people, they don't necessarily think of vegetarianism or veganism as being effeminate. I think they just view meat as being masculine.
As being more masculine.
And there's this kind of thing that people do, and again, I've seen this cross-culturally, where if it's not masculine, it defaults to feminine. So it's not necessarily that you're effeminate and womanly and you may as well put on the lipstick. It's just that masculine is a tight box, and if you don't fit in that box, then you just default to effeminate, even though it's not particularly effeminate to just get like a Cobb salad for lunch.
Yeah. Would a Cobb salad be...
It'd be vegetarian. Actually, there's ham and cheese and
egg in there. Yeah. So, bad example of a salad.
Well, I mean, but you know what I mean. Like, lentil soup.
Yeah.
With cheese on toast, you know? Like, that's not... I don't think that's effeminate.
No, no. But until we can start perceiving veganism as not being masculine, you know, I think it's going to take a moment for our psyche to evolve.
I think it just needs to become neutral, and we need to become indifferent to it. I don't think it needs to be
gendered. You don't think it needs to be gendered? We just need to get over it?
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah. I say that, and yet again, like, I've seen cross-culturally
that there are... So, our listeners, if you see, you know, come across a vegan in the wild, as it were, don't think any... like less of them, I suppose. I'm not sure where I'm going with this, but is veganism effeminate? That is really the crux of this interview and this study. And the evidence, at least from this Polish sample, seems to be that people perceive vegetarian and vegan diets as less masculine.
Okay,
so we'll see how that translates on the broader sense. We're going to be playing out with Lesbians on Ecstasy. It's the name of the band.
Yes.
And their song, Sisters in the Struggle. I have been Luke Smith.
And I have been Sebastian. Thank you for listening. Are you listening to me? 400 prophecies.
six extra quantity. Are you listening to me? 400 prophecies of a hypocrisy. 600 centuries. Are you listening to me?
Canada is there when it seems no one else is. Are you struggling with an LGBT issue? Maybe you're a parent, a family member, employer, a coworker, an educator, a healthcare provider. PFLAG is Canada's only national organization that helps all Canadians who are struggling with issues of sexual orientation and gender identity. PFLAG Canada supports, educates, and provides resources 24/7. Visit pflagcanada.ca.